This program is part of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. For more shows like this, visit our website at cosmicpotatonetwork.com.
I'm glad of the choice you made. It seems that a lift is the least I can offer you.
The Ranger's already sent a Corsair for me. It should be here by now. But I will take two of your phasers, if that's all right. The Vigilante could always use a couple more.
Of course.
And in case you ever need a Vigilante.
Thank you.
After they brought you back from your time in the Collective, do you honestly feel that you regained your humanity?
Yes.
All of it?
No. But we're both working on it.
I was in the academy. We would follow every toast with a song.
From the historic Cosmic Potato Studios, welcome to Star Trek All Access.
I take it the odds are against us and the situation is grim.
You could say that.
Sounds like fun.
This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek.
Saddle up. Lock and load.
Join us as we dive into the newest content coming available on CBS All Access, as well as retrospectives of the past series and films.
You have no idea how much I'm restraining myself from knocking you on your ass.
Now, on with the show.
There's coffee in that nebula.
Joe on True, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Sean Ray, and tonight we will be discussing the fourth episode of Star Trek Picard, which was titled Absolute Candor and was written by Michael Chabon. And we'll also be discussing episode 5, Stardust City Rag, which was written by Kristen Bayer, and both of these episodes were directed by Jonathan Frakes. And on the panel tonight we have Rick. How's it going, sir?
Well, now that you have need of me.
we have Scott Madison. How's it going?
Mr. Quark likes your work.
Mr. Quark of Ferenginar. And Virginia, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
And John Irons, how are you, sir?
Do you want Tolkien in Star Trek? Because Elle knows how you get Tolkien in Star Trek.
Okay. And back with us again, our guest that we had on an episode from last season, we've got Seth Walker. How's it going, sir?
Good, guys. I bind my sword to everybody tonight as the only Milat, or however you pronounce it, warrior nun in pants.
Does that mean our podcast is a hopeless cause?
Very, very much, but I'm leading it, so I'm not going to help.
All right, so Absolute Candor. We weren't able to record last week, so we're gonna cover both of these episodes in one episode. So let's talk about this one first because it came first. How about that? That's how it works. How did you guys? First of all, Seth, since you haven't been on this season, how have you liked the season so far?
I've liked it a lot. I mean, it's really great to get back into the Star Trek universe that we've lived in, you know, updates on our 90s Star Trek friends, and that's amazing. And I'm a really big fan of this show. I've got a little bit of pacing issues with the very beginning of it, but especially with Absolute Candor, I think it's really kicking into pretty high gear, and I'm fully in love with this show.
What did you think specifically about episode 4?
I loved seeing the different shades of Romulans. I loved getting more, you know, leave Earth. I don't really like to be on Earth in Star Trek. That was one of my biggest complaints about the Kelvin movies, which I loved, was that the first two spent way too much time on Earth. And so once we finally got off of Earth, it was pretty nice. And getting to see this Romulan colony is awesome. I love to see all different Romulans down there. So for the people who have the issues with the changes, you can see that it's a gradual change and that there's a bunch of different types. And so, you know, the ones you're seeing and you're having a problem with are just, you know, these new Romulans that have grown up since the planet was destroyed.
Yeah.
But yeah, this episode was good.
Yeah, I was thinking about that there's a whole series of, or a whole generation of Romulans that probably have never been on Romulus, you know, because it blew up 14, 15 years ago.
Eleanor's age, everybody around that are going to have no idea about society before. And so their whole development's going to be completely different.
Mm-hmm. Right. Virginia, what about you? What'd you think?
I was kind of divided on this episode. I thought the Romulan warrior nuns were badass. I needed to see like some kind of training montage or something. That would have been awesome. I really could have done without the whole Soji Borg cube. Like, I feel like that information could have been fit into another episode and just give me more warrior nuns. Like, I didn't really get any information from that. But my other thought was, is Picard really just going to track down every woman he's disappointed in the last 15 years and ask her for some kind of help? I mean, yeah, so I enjoyed this most recent episode a lot more than I enjoyed Absolute Candor, but I still really liked parts of it.
Yeah. I thought that this episode was kind of slow. I mean, it slowed down a lot. I thought it was a decent episode, but, in a lot of ways, there was also a lot of nostalgia with this episode because I felt, I don't know, TNG did a lot of this where we go see planets where everybody lives in like a village and they drink water out of a well, you know, that kind of stuff, like insurrection type planets, you know, and they all live like very quaint lives and stuff. So that the planet itself kind of reminded me of that. But there were a few things that didn't quite feel right to me, because I keep making a joke that Elnor is Legolas, you know, but he really is very elvish, you know. He seems like he's the type of character that they want to bring in. Every Star Trek series has to have a character that just doesn't understand humanity, you know.
Right.
It feels like that's what his part's going to be here, because as we go into talking about this and the next episode, they bring him in this episode. And then next episode, he does nothing. They have nothing for him to do. You know, I would have
liked a couple quick jokes, like you were saying about not understanding things.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much nothing beyond that.
I would have liked it if this bunch of warrior ninja nuns or whatever, if we had seen more of them do some ninja stuff, you know, but, we did. I mean,
Jesus with warrior nuns, and don't show any warrior nuns.
Yeah. We saw Elnor cut off somebody's head, you know, but it would have been cool if we had seen at least like one fight where three or four of them were involved or something like that.
How much did we get? None.
None.
I get the sense that you don't need.
If we stay up this late, you're going to get that kind of shit.
What,
like I said, I get the sense that it's not a fight where you need three or four of them. They're like Terminators. Like one is enough. One is enough to get the job done for most situations.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with the slow reveal of badassery, or the delayed gratification, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of characters to deal with, so I'm fine to keep him in the proverbial back pocket, so that when he does stuff that's impressive, it's more impressive.
What'd you think overall?
Thought it sucked. Oh, the show? It was great. I don't know. I feel like episode two was probably thus far, I want to say my least favorite, just because I felt like it was the slowest. But much like first season of Discovery, I feel like every episode at this point has been better than the one before. I agree with you, Virginia. I could have used less, sock sliding on the Borg cube. Zero.
Yeah, what was that?
That I could have done with none of that. To me, the only point of that scene was he's slowly introduced the idea of inconsistencies in her history to her. So he's starting to kind of pull away the veil without trying to trigger her activation. But, that part of that scene, that was, 10 seconds out of a 3-minute sequence that I did not need.
Are we starting to, I think we're also starting to see that he may actually have some feelings for her.
There's no may about it.
Yeah.
But those feelings are developed so quick. I don't know. That romance feels rushed, unless there's a time element that we're seeing longer period of time condensed while we're watching Picard's adventures. But if it's lining up, it feels rushed to me for what's the deep emotions.
Cersei said that. he's been training for this for a long time, so he may have convinced himself he was in love with her long before he ever met her.
Right.
But even if that's the case, we haven't really seen a whole lot of background to it. It feels like every time we see Narek and Soji together, they make sure that we see them either physically close, or making out, or having sex to show that they're in a relationship. But the interactions that build any emotional connection between the two of them, we don't see.
Well, I don't think they...
So we're not seeing half of whatever relationship they have. So it's hard to buy into it fully.
But I think that's correct. I don't think there is some, deep history that we haven't seen. I think... he's the hot, mysterious bad boy, and she's into it, and he's playing her. I don't think it's, I don't think there's some relationship that's not being shown. I think they're showing what there is, which is he's, effectively doing his job as a con man. Mm-hmm. But also
feeling conflicted about doing it, and at least in his performance, he's performing as though his character is becoming emotionally invested in her, and he's conflicted about what he's trying to do. And she seems to be, very, very much taken with him, not just in a lustful way, but she's getting caught up emotionally as well. And I don't see where that happened.
It's, I don't know, maybe we just had different experiences in high school, but I can absolutely, and that's basically what she is. She's obviously very intelligent and capable, but I am sure she's socially, aside from actually being young, she's naive. She's certainly been sheltered her whole life by necessity,
And how old do you think she is? I feel like she popped
three.
Distance.
Three, yeah, they said.
Yeah. Oh, I missed.
She's how old? Okay.
Three. She,
the twins are 3 years old. They have memories that make them think they're older, but in actuality, the twins are 3 years old.
So how old do you think she thinks she is?
I think she 21. Like 20, 21, yeah. Something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yes. That's a, yeah. Young and foolish in love.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, what about you? What did you think about the episode overall?
It was, of course it was good because it's an episode of Picard and they've been pretty consistently high quality, well made. What threw me off more than anything else, I think, is being thrown feet first into the deep end of Romulan culture and society in a way that we've never seen before, which is fine because Romulans have always been portrayed as very secretive, keeping to themselves and not letting others learn too much about them. So when they really open the door wide, it gives an inside look into how Romulan society works. You expect you're going to learn things that you never knew before. But to see so many different facets of how non-military Romulans live and to learn, okay, there's warrior nuns and they have a a long multi-syllable name for their group, a multi-syllable name for members of that group. Both of them are in the Romulan language, so I've already forgotten both of them. Trying to juggle all these new things that we're learning about Romulans was a little tough to do at first, easier on the second viewing, but by the time I got to the end of Absolute Candor the first time, I felt really kind of spun around because that was a lot of new Romulan information to get all at one time.
Mm-hmm. Rick, what about you?
I loved this episode. I've loved this series. I'll admit, when we get to the next episode, it's kind of testing my love. but that's getting ahead of ourselves here. I enjoyed the pacing. I loved being thrown into Romulan society. With the exception of Nemesis, I've really enjoyed it when we got to go into, go to Romulus and see the Romulans because they were, they're probably the least fleshed out aliens, regular alien race on Star Trek. So I'm digging that. I love that this episode allowed me to crystallize something that's been bugging me since the beginning, and I finally figured it out in this one. Because we've seen Picard basically being a douche or being called out for being a douche to people for the last 15 years. And I had trouble reconciling that. And then in this episode, they finally showed enough that it clicked for me. And that is that Jean-Luc Picard is an excellent starship captain. He is really good at running a ship, at being the head of a group of people that he has to, by necessity and not necessarily rules anymore, but by, out of the needs of maintaining smooth running on the ship, he has to maintain a certain amount of professional distance between himself and his crew. When he's no longer running a ship, that's still his default state. He doesn't think about people until he needs them, and it doesn't dawn on him that that's a problem for them. Mm-hmm. So he's a great captain, but he's a shitty friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing through this. It's, I could be wrong, but it seems to me like that's how Patrick Stewart is playing him. He's like, why are you all so pissed at me? I didn't do anything wrong. And it's slowly dawning on him, especially with Elnor, that, oh, maybe I should have picked up the communicator every now and then and said, hey, how the fuck are you? Oh, sorry.
I think there's a level of
– I'm going to start there. I'm going to start tiling because you dropped your first F bomb.
Because when he's talking to them and he's getting pulled away right when he's about to beam off, he says he's going to come back with the Federation to evacuate them. I think he fully expects that. And when he's let down by Starfleet and everybody deciding to pull the plug on the evacuation, I think it crushed him and his entire faith in everything that he stood for so much that it damaged his ability to maintain any sort of relationship.
That's my theory, too, is that he was just kind of broken and that he couldn't. No one. He doesn't know how to be in front of people like that. Mm-hmm. Picard is Picard. Picard is this pinnacle of virtue and strength and all that. And I think he just doesn't know how, like, he just couldn't. I think he just couldn't. He was just, you know. And by the time he got himself together enough maybe to do it, you know, what's the point?
Didn't his brother call him out on that in family? Like, you know, I'm back here tending the family vineyard and everything. You're off being a starship captain. You don't have anything to do with us. And then as far as we know, he didn't really have anything to do with them after that again until they died in Generations. You know.
So. Oh, but those are different people who died in Generations. I saw their pictures. They're totally different people.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I want to, since we haven't moved into the. Go ahead.
We'll see in Stardust City Rag, and it's something I'll talk about when we get to that. I don't think Jean-Luc Picard knows how to be a normal human being. I think he knows how to be a starship captain. He just sucks at being just a guy.
Mm-hmm. Just Jean-Luc. Just mm-hmm. JL. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, that's okay. I don't know that it's that he sucks at being a regular person. I think he's just not a regular person. You know, I don't think he's like putting on the character of who he thinks Jean-Luc Picard is. I think he is those things.
No. If that's what I'm coming across as, I mean, I apologize. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that anything other than being a starship captain, he doesn't do very well.
Okay.
At the end of the flashback scene at the beginning of the episode, what is it about modern Star Trek that people can't stand still when they get transported? Because he starts walking, the stairs.
I saw that, like, too.
Beam me up, and he's walking down the stairs. Okay, well, be still, because we're gonna beam you up here, and you're just gonna wander off the transporter pad.
Yeah, where are you walking to, Jean-Luc? You're gonna
It's 15 years later. They've improved the technology. It's the touchscreen of.
It's transport. Not as bad as in Star Trek Beyond when Kirk beamed out or beamed in while he was in full speed on a motorcycle. Yeah.
Or when, you know, beaming people out of a free fall, you know, sure, mm-hmm. they can say that's possible in the movies, but it's not that, oh, now it's, you know, a couple decades in the future, so transporters can beam people out while they're moving. The point is, why is Picard moving? He doesn't need in that area to beam out, and he doesn't need to be already walking when he gets on board whatever ship he's going to.
Yeah.
It used to be, beam me up, and you stand still, and then when you rematerialize, and you start moving. Now he's like,
doing the moonwalk to get on the escalator just to have some style.
I would moonwalk every time I was getting teleported anywhere.
I would moonwalk through. Well, sir, you're walking. Yeah, well, energize. But, sir, you're walking.
I do it with style, man.
And then that also brings me to the chateau on the ship. This is not – okay, so I understand why they did this. First of all, one reason they did this is because they already built that set and they want to use it.
Yeah,
but sure. This is not Picard's ship. This is Rios' ship. You know, so he's not the captain, but when we're used to seeing him as the captain of the Enterprise, we get a lot of scenes with him in his ready room. But we don't want to have a bunch of scenes on this show with Picard in Rios' ready room looking subordinate to him or whatever. So they create this area where Picard hangs out and everybody comes to him. So it's still like he's commanding the room, even though it's not his ship. Does that make sense?
Yes,
I get that description, but what gets me is he also has quarters on the ship.
Yeah.
So he's got his own quarters, and he's taken over the holodeck on the ship. Why does he get those?
Yeah, it was the
it was Javon and Laris. Thank you.
Javon and Laris sent the schematics and the details for the room, and the hospitality hologram built it, but the writers and producers created this element of the story to have the chateau recreated, and I don't understand why.
Well, okay.
He's an emergency hospitality hologram. Have you not ever had an emergency, a hospitality emergency? I would have liked many to see him just appear and say, "What is the name? Please say the nature of your hospitality emergency." I'm like, "I need a Coke and some M&Ms right now."
I don't know.
Well, spoon to use. Seven calls him out on it in the next episode, and basically what happened is you've got his two doting Romulans who are scared shitless that he's leaving Earth at all. And so they get a hold of Rios and they're like, all right, look, he's 9,000 years old. He thinks he's still a badass. We need to take care of him. Give him his room to hide in so he feels comfortable. This is what it looks like. And then he goes in and goes, all right, cool, I'll stay here. But I think the bottom line is it's a cheaper set because it exists and it doesn't have a lot of blinking lights on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, in universe, I mean, they hired the ship. So if you hire a private plane, you can expect to, you know, if you want to put a poster up, you can put a poster up. Like,
yeah.
They're going to have your Coke and M&M.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it's
also,
not that Rios, he took over the holosuite. He paid for the holosuite. He paid for the ship.
And also, Rios is very clearly deep in the throes of hero worship.
Yeah.
So when your hero is on your plane and he says, I'm a little uncomfortable, I miss my bedroom, and you have a chance to give him the bedroom, you give him the goddamn bedroom.
Yeah.
Can I say that all the Rios holograms are kind of confusing me? Like, if I didn't watch, put the subtitles on and it said Irish accent, I would not know who is who.
I've talked to a lot of people online that were confused as to how many holograms that there are. I'm not really crazy about all the holograms myself. I think they were just there to give what's the actor that plays Rios? Santiago Cabrera, excuse me.
Yeah.
Just give him a reason to be able to do a bunch of voices and stuff. Well, and they even confused me in the next episode because the EMH popped up and he said, please state the nature of your psychiatric emergency. I was like, they got an EPH too?
Okay,
I didn't realize it was the same one.
Here's my deal with all the holograms, because they started to bug me a little bit, and then I started thinking about it. How many times have we heard, or even have we said, wow, if they could do that with the Doctor, why don't they just have a whole holographic crew? Or something along the lines of, if they can do that with this piece of tech, why don't they do it more? And here we've got a ship where they did it more.
I also was starting to get, like, you know, by hologram, like, two or three, I was like, okay, it's just a thing. The clue is going to be a thing. But if they keep adding them, like, the more that they add, I'm into it now.
Yeah.
I don't need a new accent with each one, but I mean, I get that's basically for the audience to help tell them apart so that, you know, because they all look alike. They dress slightly differently. Maybe one's got long hair. Maybe one speaks Spanish. You know, they got to do what they can do. But the idea that this guy just has no one else on this ship except the emergency holograms because his life is
who
a constant
he made
emergency.
Look like him.
Yeah, so we made it look like him, but because that's the only person that he trusts, except for Raffi, maybe.
I do like the navigating hologram. He looked like he was hung.
Yes.
I was a big fan of that guy.
And I like that he only spoke Spanish. I like that part a lot.
He spoke a little bit of English, because when they talked about beaming the pilot that we find out later is Seven, he looks at Raffi and said, "Nah, too risky."
I think it's clever with all the holograms. One, because it's a nice gag. Like John was saying, the more holograms we see, the funnier it's going to get for me.
Yes.
Because this seemingly unending well of holograms. But I also enjoy what it says about the progression of the technology. I'm doing a very slow, casual rewatch of DS9. And I just got to Dr. Bashir, I presume, where they're talking about the first design for a long-term medical hologram. And then on Voyager, the doctor made a subroutine for himself to be an emergency command hologram. These little expansions in the program, which I thought really interesting. So now we see decades later, they've expanded. They have a whole line that you can get in a package, buy a holo package for your ship, and you can get a whole emergency hologram crew standing by just in case you need them. And I wonder think if that's a very intuitive progression for that technology that I enjoy.
Well, also, I wonder if he pays like a subscription fee.
Well, there's also the fact that there was a lot of storylines in the first couple of seasons of Voyager where they were having problems because the ship wasn't designed to run the Doctor's program as much as they were having to run it. And so they would not have been able to run multiple holograms like that. Plus, he was originally only designed to be in sickbay. He couldn't leave sickbay. But now these holograms have the run of the ship. So they've obviously got holo emitters just all over the ship now. Yeah. So your entire ship is a holodeck, basically.
Well, you notice his flight controls were holographic as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, you know, just to it's like having your what's the little Google assistant, whatever. It's like you have one in every room. You know, it is the logical, reasonable progression of the technology, like Scott was saying.
So I'm gonna be referring back to this a couple of times during the show, but I read a book this week. It was the Picard novel that came out last week, and it was called, what was the title of it? Last Best Hope. The Last Best Hope. And in the novel, it is about all of the stuff that happened between Picard being promoted to admiral and being assigned the task of moving Romulans off of Romulus. All the stuff that happened between then and the attack on Mars. And so we find out a lot of backstory for Raffi.
What's the time frame for that?
It starts in, so the attack on Mars was in 2385. The book starts in 2381 and runs up to there. So it's 4 years. Okay. And there's some backstory about Jurati and her relationship with Maddox and stuff like that, how that all progressed and the idea to come up with the synths and what they were going to be designed to do and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really good book. It's not a very action-filled book. It's more of a political story. You know, there's a lot of politics going on because Picard is running into resistance with the Romulans a lot because a lot of the high-ups in the Romulan Empire believe that the Federation are trying to take the fact that their star is going supernova and they want to spread the Romulans out all over the place so that they're no longer a threat to them. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because Vashti is a big part of the book. And the reason Picard keeps going back to Vashti is because it was the one spot where he moved Romulans to this place and it was successful. And they got along with the natives of the planet. They were part of society. And the lady that's in charge of the Kawat Malat, I can't remember her name.
Zani.
Okay. He felt like she was like a kindred spirit to him. Like she was the one Romulan that he had met that got what he was trying to do. That he was not trying to take over the Romulan Empire. That he was trying to help them survive what was going to happen to their planet. And so she was trying to help him. So whenever he went out working with other Romulan planets and trying to move them to other places and dealing with the neutral zone and all of that, whenever the stress got too high for him, he went back to Vashti and he would just stay there for a couple of days. He would talk to her. He would hang out with Elnor and tell him some stories and everything and get himself back to understanding what he's supposed to be doing, and then he could go out and work some more, you know. So that was that's the big deal in his heart for that group of people and for Elnor and all of that. So I just wanted to bring that up because I think it answers a lot of the questions of, you know, why this place was so important to him, why Elnor was so important to him, that we might not get from just watching the show.
Are those novels considered canon? Do you know?
This particular novel is, for right now, it's considered canon. But with the novels, they can always change it if they want to. But since it's a story it's telling a story that they're not really telling here. It's just like some backstory stuff. So it can be considered canon. They're pushing it as canon, you know. So.
Well, that they said the same thing about Desperate Hours.
I know.
And then totally when the Enterprise showed up on Discovery, they went, nope, didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. They can always change it later. But for right now, they're calling it canon. But I wouldn't expect to hear them, like, refer to anything that happened in the book. But the book just fills in some gaps. It's not required reading or anything like that, you know. Gotcha. So, Elnor, when Picard goes back, Elnor is less than thrilled to see him because he felt like Picard abandoned him, which Picard did pretty much abandon him because he abandoned the entire thing.
Romulan Empire.
You know, the whole thing that he was working on. So, obviously, Picard's got some guilt about that, but at the same time, he wants Elnor to join his cause because he's got a particular set of skills that he could use.
I see, and this is the other instance that made me, you know, I don't disagree with what y'all were saying about, you know, Picard is you know, carrying around a buttload of guilt about the whole situation, but when he is talking to Elnor, and Elnor is like, why do you want me? And Picard's like, because you're a badass with a sword. He just doesn't get it. He doesn't realize that I need you because of what you can do isn't enough for Elnor. It just doesn't even occur to him until Elnor is like right in his face going, you know, now that you need me, bite me. And he wants, you know.
I think that's also a function of never having been a parent. You know, he's never had to. I mean, as you say, yeah, he's had crew and he's had people under him, but the people under him, you know, are adults. They're like, you know, he's, as we know, he's never been good with kids.
Yeah.
And Elnor's basically his kid, but he's never really had a kid and he didn't actually raise this kid. So all the stuff that a parent would know to say or would occur to someone who is at least, you know, fulfilled that role to some degree. And he's been a father figure to lots of people, but he's never raised a kid. And I think that's part of it too. It's part of his blind spot as well.
The closest he came was Wesley, but Wesley was really raised by a lot of people.
Yeah. Because you can make an argument for Data.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to realize that what Elnor is looking for, what he's expecting is, he asks the question, why is it you want me? And the answer is supposed to be because I'm old, you're young, you're a capable warrior, and also I love you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what he's supposed to say, but he doesn't know he's supposed to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm also seeing online that I interpreted part of the show differently than what I'm seeing some other people say, because there's a scene after he talks to Elnor when he's getting ready to beam back up to the ship, but he has to wait for a window to open. He goes to that canteen that's there in the village. Yeah. And there's a sign that says Romulans only, and he grabs the sign, rips it off, and he goes in there and sits down, you know. So a lot of people that were online are saying, well, you know, he's showing those Romulans that he's going to do whatever he wants to do. And it's like, I kind of interpreted that whole area as there's some racial tension there between the Romulans and whoever the natives were of that planet. And that the natives kind of put them there and said, this is where you're going to be. You eat here at the Romulans only. And Picard was trying to stand in solidarity with them and show them that, hey, I consider you to be my equal. But then there's a lot of them there that didn't care to see him do that because they're pissed off about him kind of abandoning them years ago.
I didn't get that.
I love your interpretation, but I think you're wrong. it's great, but I think wrong. I think the Romulans, I think there is racial strife because behind, again, on a rewatch, one of the other buildings had humans only. So I don't think it's because, you know, the Romulans were second class citizens and the humans forced them to designated areas. I think they kind of self-segregated because there's racial issues.
Xenophobia is like one of the primary tenets of the Romulan Empire.
And after Starfleet pulled out of the relocation effort and the rescue effort, then it would make sense for the Romulans to fall back on what they know, which is isolationism. They withdraw and they stick to themselves.
And it's all the humans' fault.
Right. They reached their hands out once to accept help from outsiders, and look what happened. So,
that's
what we get for trying to intermingle.
The badges of what did Zani say? It was the rebirth movement or something like that.
Yeah,
they said that in the episode.
Yeah, I think it was Rios that mentioned Vashti was a starting point or a strong base for the rebirth movement.
Was it Rios? Okay,
I think so.
Yeah, they were doing the data download on the planet. She was telling everybody, you know, yeah, Vashti's not what it used to be because of this and this.
I like my interpretation better.
That's great.
It seems like it would have been more appropriate for Picard to have thrown down the humans only sign then. I mean, he's just walking into the Romulans and saying, I'm coming here instead of to the humans. What are you guys doing? We should all be embracing our friends, the Romulans.
Yeah, because I saw the humans only sign, but I was thinking, like, you know, in Alabama in the 60s, there would be two water fountains, and one would say whites only, and one would say blacks only, but the black people didn't put that there. You know, they were told,
right, that would this be, is where you use That would it. Be like walking up to the blacks sign, ripping it down as a white person and saying, we should all get to use this. It's like, no, that's not really appropriate in this situation. That's how it felt to me.
I didn't see the humans only sign, nor did I actually see any humans. I only noticed Romulans on that planet and no one else. The only non-Romulan that I noticed was Picard.
Well, Zani mentioned that when the Quatmaran, or whatever the hell they're called, became essentially the lawgivers, that they were protecting both humans, both Terrans and Romulans.
Yeah, they were basically keeping the whole place from turning into a war zone where, you know, the humans wouldn't execute Romulans and the Romulans wouldn't try to fight back. You know, they're keeping everything, you know, everybody just chill.
Yeah. Virginia, you were trying to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say, I wonder what y'all think, because I agree, like, that seemed very out of character for Picard to basically throw a temper tantrum at the Romulans only bar. What do y'all think about the idiomatic syndrome, or whatever the equivalent of what he has, how much that may be affecting his behavior at this point?
That's true. He's out of F's to give.
Plus, I mean, yeah, he's, like you say, he's 9,000 years old, and, you know.
My only problem with your theory, Sean, now that I think about it, because I hadn't heard that at all, but when he took that sign down, I think if your interpretation was correct, we would have seen fear or concern in the denizens of the bar instead of anger and outrage.
Well, I took that as they were just pissed at him. Because it was him, and they've been mad at him for so long.
Yeah, I think because they, you know, a couple of times they mentioned that this separatist movement was gaining a foothold. I think the interpretation was that this bar is one of the places where that's welcome. If you would indulge me, this came up on the spoiler thread on Facebook, and I remember writing something intelligent, but I don't remember what it was. So I looked it up, and here you go. So Scott basically asked if it was part of Picard's plan to kind of lure Elnor, almost call him Eldon, lure Elnor into helping by putting himself in danger. So here's what I wrote. I think it was his sub-plan, or rather his sub-hope, that Elnor would show up, but honestly, I think he'd have done it anyway. I also agree with Kevin Hoppner in that advanced age has severely depleted the number of Fs Picard gives, as we already know that Picard is practically incapable of ignoring injustice when he sees it. In addition, he helped found this community and was a beloved member of it for a time. For the record, my initial reaction was, dude, it's their planet, why are you starting shit? But also consider this. Imagine I opened a restaurant years ago, I being a black man. I put everything I had into making it happen and was actually kind of thriving, and it was actually kind of thriving for a while. Circumstances forced me to sell it, and I haven't been back in 14 years. When I do finally return, the neighborhood has gone to hell, and there's a sign up that says whites only on the front of the restaurant. I'll probably walk my happy black ass in there and sit down, too. Not to start a fight, though I'd be prepared for one, but because you almost kind of have to. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I've got something, totally different thing, but I want to bring this up because as I was rewatched both of them today, and when I do the rewatch, I turn the subtitles on because I always miss stuff when I'm, you know, it's my wife and I watching it, the dog and the kids and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the second time I watch it, put the subtitles on. When one of the times when during the sock sliding crap, Narek mentions that Soji left Earth on the Ellison.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this an homage / peace offering? Granted, Harlan Ellison is dead now.
Yeah.
Or is it a bit of a veiled FU to Roddenberry?
I think it's more of a. I think it would be a tribute to Ellison. I don't think they're gonna FU Roddenberry because Gene Roddenberry's son, like one of the producers of the show. He's in the credits.
Rod's an executive producer, but in television, executive producer can be more of a honorary title.
Especially considering the show has about, 47 executive producers in the credits?
Yeah.
But the thing is, it is well known. You know, there are two people that history will recall as being screwed over by Gene Roddenberry. One is Harlan Ellison, the other is Alexander Courage. So I just thought it was interesting that they chose that particular name for her ship.
Yeah, I definitely think it was more just a tribute to a luminary, legendary sci-fi writer. Mm. Certainly a better homage than Elon Musk High School.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Ellison just passed. Was it was in 2019, correct?
Yeah, it wasn't long ago at all.
Yeah, so I think this is the first new Trek since he's passed, honestly. So it makes sense that they would honor him in that way. Interestingly enough, with ship names, the Wallenberg class transports are named probably after Raoul Wallenberg, who is a Swiss citizen who saved tens of thousands of Jews from the Nazis in World War II by transporting them out.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So, and it fits.
Nice pull. Nice pull, Seth. I would not have known that. That's
good. If you look at the, I don't know, you got to like really freeze frame it, but the name on the humans only bar was Wahlburgers, I believe. Also, deep cut. Prime cut.
Wahlburgers is the name of the hamburger restaurant that Mark Wahlberg and his brothers own. And they have a TV show where they...
Like, yeah, I'm sorry. That was a lie. Everything I said was a lie. I think lying is okay if everyone knows it's a joke. But if nobody knows it's a joke, I'm going to apologize immediately.
I thought it fit with the Wallenberg thing. I was going to say, no, I bet it's after the ships. They're probably... The burgers are named after the ships.
I did watch the...
And Mark Wahlberg shows up. He's like, hi, Picard. How's it going? Say hi to your mother for me.
You want me to address you? Since we're talking about ships, I just want to throw this out there, too. That Bird of Prey was freaking awesome.
Yeah.
That was nice one of the updated. More gorgeous ship updates without really changing much that I've ever seen. Well, I've always loved the Romulan Bird of Prey.
And that was a TOS-era Bird of Prey, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Is there any explanation why a ship that old would be out there?
This terrorist dude Nakatar, whatever the hell his name was, got a hold of an antique bird of prey and has been terrorizing the planet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, and the Fenris.
They were badass ships, you know. They were right up there with the Klingon D7 and the Constitution class. Mm-hmm. In fact, their plasma weapon, which apparently they aren't using anymore, was almost took out the Enterprise in Balance of Terror.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys notice that in the scene where Soji and Narek are on their way to their skating?
Soccer and rendezvous.
Yeah. Their Borg celebration that they were talking about doing. He says something about it being an ancient ceremony or something that they're going to do as they're walking. And just as they're walking off frame, she cocks her head like she's processing the information or whatever. But when she cocks her head, she looked exactly like the way Data used to cock his head when he was processing something that he didn't understand. And I don't know if that – I guess it was done on purpose, but, you know, when she did that, I was like, that looked a lot like Brent Spiner, you know, the way she cocked her head right there.
I didn't catch that, but that's a good catch.
Yeah, I'm sure it was on purpose, and I did not catch it at all.
The formula – there was a former Romulan senator that was in that canteen, and he accuses Picard of – orchestrating a plan to spread the Romulan Empire out to make them less of a threat to the Federation, and puts a sword in his hand basically and tells him he's going to fight him. And then Elnor shows up and goes all crouching tiger, hidden dragon, and cuts the dude's head off, which is one of the more brutal killings that we've seen in Star Trek. But I watched the first time I watched the episode, I watched it on my phone. And the second time I watched it on my laptop. When you watch it on a bigger screen, when I watched it on my phone, I did not notice the green blood oozing out of the cut in his neck. And then I just saw his neck, his head.
Dude, it practically splattered on the camera.
Yeah, I just didn't notice it the way it just kind of started oozing out of the slit or whatever. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, to be fair, he's got a baby in the house, so there's probably green fluid on his phone. I just thought it was really high definition.
That's true.
One of the things I liked about that scene, and it's funny, when I first saw it, I thought it was a little odd, but then this weekend, something happened. This will all come back around. You know, Picard gets the sword in his hand and he immediately takes a fighting stance, and they do one pass and he fights back, and then finally he's like, oh wait, no, and he throws the sword down. Which struck me as a little weird that he would fight at all before throwing the sword down, if that was his intention, was to not fight. And then this weekend, I went to the Ren Faire here. We all went to the Ren Faire, and one of my former students went with us. And they had a fencing thing at the fair. And it was, you go in and they put you in a fencing jacket and you put a fencing hat on and they clip two balloons to your helmet, to your fencing mask.
Funny fencing.
Well, except you're using actual épées.
At the Renaissance Fair.
Bunny fencing. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Yeah, the one near me, they do the same thing. They call it bunny fencing.
Okay. And the idea is to pop the two balloons. And the thing is, my former student has never held a sword in his life. I've been sword fighting since I was 18. And I got one of his balloons right away. And then I was like, all right, this is going to be over in like 2 seconds. And, you know, we both paid $3. Well, actually, I paid $6 for it. I paid for us both. And, I don't want this over in 30 seconds. So I was trying to let him get in, and I couldn't. My sword fighting reflexes are so reflexive now that I couldn't not fight properly. And then watching that again today, it was like, oh, that all makes sense now, because we know Picard is, you know, he knows his way around a sword. He knows how to use a sword and a saddle and, all the stuff we saw him do. I thought that was a really nice touch.
I didn't think of it that way. I presumed because, Elnor, appears, a few seconds later, and he's behind the aggressor, the senator. So if Picard's phasing him, Picard would have seen Elnor coming up. And he may have just thrown the sword down because, okay, this, we really need to stop fighting now because he's going to kill you. This stop, let's just which is, as we know what happened. And Elnor gives him the chance. He's like, that's the best line ever. Choose to live.
That was badass when he's, I regret your decision.
That was great.
I got to say, I love the sound of the Romulan language. This is more Romulan than we've ever heard. And I like that they've kind of made it almost like Arabic sounding. A lot of the sound, which we've not gotten, Klingon, yes, but Klingon has its own. I really like the sound of the, I like that we finally have a Romulan language other than Jolan Tru.
Yeah.
And I feel like Picard is really almost made for the rewatch. Like, this episode and the next episode, they have characters say lines that you interpret one way when you're watching it, but after you see the whole episode, like, oh, I bet he was saying that because of this. So, like, in this episode, when Picard is talking to the head nun, Zani, and he's like, well, he may die. And she's like, well, he will die, but, at least he can live first or something like that. I interpreted it at the moment. I was like, well, I thought she was saying, well, he will die as in, well, yeah, everybody dies. Your classic, motivational poster kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, he's going
every
to die.
Every turkey dies.
Yeah. He's going to die at some point, but he should, get out of the house once or twice before. But at the very end, you find out that the requisite for a worthy cause is that it has to be a hopeless mission. So anyone who binds their sword to anyone from this order goes in expecting to die. So he will die. It's not some philosophical thing in the future. It's like, no, he's probably going to go with you and die.
Yeah.
That's the plan. And it makes everybody's, because the three of them all know that. And it makes every scene after her saying that more potent. At least it did to me.
Let me ask y'all about Zani. It was driving me nuts both times that we saw her because she seems really familiar to me. And I went onto her IMDb and I haven't seen anything else she's done. Did anyone else have that experience that the actress playing her seem really familiar?
Yeah.
She did look, but I have not looked at her IMDb.
I didn't look her up because, frankly, that happens anytime I watch any episode of any Star Trek episode ever. So I just kind of filter it out. But yes.
I mean, I do watch SVU. I've probably seen her on that. But I don't remember watching any of this stuff either. Oh, she's in several episodes of How to Get Away with Murder. I've seen a few episodes of that. That's maybe that's what I saw her on.
I've never seen any of that.
And if she's on that, then she's probably on Shonda Rhimes show too.
Oh, she's a main character on that show. She's been in 34 episodes of that show. So, Yeah, that's probably where I've seen her. We've got to move towards the next episode if we're going to talk about it tonight. But we do. I do want to mention. Okay, so a Fenris Ranger ship shows up to save them from that bird of prey, but gets damaged, and the pilot requests to be beamed over. They beam the pilot over, and it's 7 of 9. It is 7 of 9. Tertiary to adjunct 1 or whatever she called herself.
Tertiary adjunct to Unimatrix 0.
There you go.
Tertiary
adjunct. Unimatrix 01.
And she shows up and she just says, "You owe me a ship, Picard," and then just passes out, you know. Of course, Picard knows who she is, and they've never met before this, according to interviews and things that I've seen, but they know who each other
are. They know who each other are, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially since they've both been Borgified in the past. I imagine they would both want to keep up with the people that have experienced things that they've experienced.
XB but, Club.
Yeah. So that moves us into Stardust City Rag. The La Serena crew begin an unpredictable and lively expedition on Freecloud to search for Bruce Maddox. When they learn Maddox has found himself in a precarious situation, a familiar face offers her assistance. Okay, so this was my favorite episode so far. I know, Rick, you said you had some problems with it. What were your problems that you had with it?
Okay, I love this episode. Okay, don't get me wrong. I'm loving Picard. I thought I had bigger problems with this episode before I did my rewatch. Remember when a few years back when, you know, before all of the CBS fan film guidelines came down and there was that Star Trek Renegades show?
Yeah.
That movie came out and I only got like 10 minutes into it because the acting was horrific. The sets were horrible. The costumes were appalling. But one of my biggest problems with it was like in the first 5 minutes, there were like 4 brutal murders. And I did not want to see Star Trek turn into Game of Thrones. And this episode starts with one of the most horrific torture scenes ever seen in Star Trek.
That eyeball, it makes me cringe just thinking about that eyeball.
And you know, when I watched it the second time, it wasn't as bad, maybe because, one, I was expecting it, and two, you know, watching it with a more critical and less cringing eye, it was very clear that that was a mechanical eye. But, I mean, it was still a horrible, horrible thing. This episode... That part of it, and then towards the end, which we'll get to, something I'm coming to grips with, and this is something I've been trying to come to grips with ever since Deep Space Nine, because remember in Deep Space, and it's got it, you know, every podcast I've ever been on, I bitched about Section 31 at some point or another, and I've had tons of people tell me that it's naive to think that the Federation wouldn't have a black ops organization and that this is reality and you've got to stop being quite such a baby about all this stuff. And, you know, I have tried. And we've talked about this. I don't know if we've talked about it on this show. I know I talked about it a lot on the Starbase recently. Star Trek stopped being metaphor years ago and is now being reality. And I think that's probably part of the big schism in fandom, because you've got a lot of people very upset about that, even though not sure they even realize why they're upset about it. But you also have a lot of people who are like, this is what we want. I want in my Star Trek now. This is Star Trek of the 21st century. This is Star Trek in a post 9/11 world where we have shows like Game of Thrones and American Horror Story and Penny Dreadful and, you know, all these shows that are so popular because they are not pulling any punches. We're seeing, you know, I mean, and not even necessarily horror. Look at Bones. Have any of y'all ever watched Bones?
Mm-hmm. Bones.
That show is gruesome AF. And it's, you know, and so this is, I've argued this over and over again, that Star Trek needs to reflect the time it's made in or it won't survive. And I've had this conversation with people, with peers, people my own age, even over on the Starbase. One of my co-hosts has a lot of problems with what Star Trek is doing now because it's not the Star Trek we grew up with. This episode tiptoed right up to the edge of my tolerance for that.
Because of that scene or something
because
else?
Of that yeah. scene and because of, you know, I don't the care about scene. The I don't care about the language. I don't care about the, you know, the more adult themes. I don't expect that every show on TV I should be able to sit down and watch with my daughter. There are literally 700 plus hours of Star Trek I can watch with Sharon.
If and they're coming out with a cartoon next year that she'll be able
yeah, to exactly. watch. Yeah, exactly. I'm not particularly bothered that this current incarnation of Star Trek is not quote unquote family friendly, but that really gruesome torture vivisection scene and what Seven does at the end of the episode, you know, I don't disagree with it. I thought it was a great thing and we'll talk about it later. It just, you know, instead of just a clean vaporization, you know, yeah. we get
The red get mist.
Blood and yeah. and I'm not sure yeah. how I feel about this.
Well, you also have to remember that the people that are making the show didn't grow up with the Star Trek that we grew up with. I mean, this is being written by there's some writers that are our age or older, but there are several people that are working on this show that were born after Next Generation went off the air.
Oh yeah. Know? Yeah.
So they're writing it the way that the stuff that they watch, you know, is written.
I agree, though. It felt it, to me, part of the issue I've had with some of the times they've gone that extra step, like there's a scene in this episode where they use the F word and they say GD when they're in the chateau, but it fits. It feels fine. It's not a big deal. But when they use use the SH word describing brown stuff with the during the flashback to the Mars scene, it felt really out of place and it was jarring. And it's the same with this particular violent scene. I feel like it's just so out of place from the rest of the episode. Even at the end with what Seven does, the explosion and the red is a little bit more than we've seen before, but for me it fits more with the rest of the episode, whereas this first ripping of the eye out, seeing the tendons and that nerve, I mean, and then they linger on it and linger, it just fell out of place. And I think that sometimes when they go are not too far, when they take this extra step that they haven't normally gone, and it just feels so out of place. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And this is one of those times that I think it was a huge miss.
I think it was a gamble, because they needed to, like, you needed to get why. Because I didn't watch much Voyager, so I didn't know. I knew who Seven was, but I didn't know this other character.
Ichab.
There hangs a tale.
Yeah,
especially with the actor too. That's even makes it more about, interesting. Yeah.
It wasn't the same actor.
No.
This was a different actor. Very right. And the actor is very problematic.
Yeah, they won't bring him back.
No.
Well, they put a stamp in that with this.
Well, should we talk about that? Well, John, finish what you're saying. What you were saying, and then we'll talk about it.
Go down that road. Just that they, you know, they needed to establish how bad this person was, so that because you're right, instinctively it's Star Trek, and yeah, she's, you know, she's kind of a, you know, a renegade vigilante now, whatever, but it's still Star Trek, and she's still a Star Trek person. She's still kind of a Federation person, and you need to have a really good reason if you're going to get behind her murdering somebody. And the gamble that they took was that, okay, we need to show you how horrific this is so that you can say, I get it. You need to see what they did to him, and you need to see her reaction to it. And I feel like I could have cut it down a tiny bit.
I'm sorry. I just
I don't disagree. Like I said, I think it was a gamble. It was a gamble, and I guess I have the same initial reaction. Like, wow, I was not expecting that. That's really kind of gruesome. But I also think you're probably right, Rick, in that that is more in line with, you know, every Batman has been a darker Batman.
Yeah.
You know, like the 60s Batman is a joke now, but it was, you know, it was a reflection of the time. It's not worse. Well, I mean, it's worse for us, but it, I mean, it's, you're making something for the audience you have today. And yeah. And so I don't think you're wrong. I think I can understand why they did it.
As far as in the show, the scene is effective for, especially for fans of Star Trek. I mean, newer people coming in watching this and this is their first Trek won't get it, but Icheb was a character that we knew for 2 years on Voyager, and to watch him die horribly like that, when the last time we saw him, they gave him a happy ending. You know, he had a happy ending at the end of Voyager. And then the next time we see him, he's getting his eyes ripped out. And they even they even said in that scene, you know, she said, "Where's your cortical node? It's got to be in here somewhere." He doesn't have a cortical node. He donated it to Seven on Voyager to save her life. You know, so they were gonna dig around in his head looking for something that wasn't even there.
With no anesthetic.
Yeah,
asshole. Exactly. Like they didn't. He didn't need to be conscious for that. Like that was just. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like it's just to make the bad person that much worse.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm just saying that it almost went too far for this old Star Trek fan.
Yeah,
not quite. And on the second watch, it was very clear that that was a mechanical eye, and there were wires coming out. It wasn't tendons, and I don't know why that made it any better, but it did.
It still would have hurt.
It still sucked, but it wasn't as horrible. But Seth, did you want to – you brought up the Manu bit. Do you want to take it or do you want me to?
You know, I'll let you do it. I don't want to say whatever.
I don't want to soil yourself.
I'll let you cover this one on your podcast. I don't know how we're going to treat this particular situation.
I mean, do we even need to?
I know nothing about it,
but what
we've talked about it long enough that our listeners are going to be like, "Yeah, tell us." I mean, what are you talking about?
It actually can be summed up pretty quickly. Okay, Manu Intirami was the guy that played Icheb in the show, and you know, I'll be perfectly frank. I never cared for the character. Once they started getting into the, you know, Jim Henson's Borg babies, I really checked out on Voyager's dealing with the Borgs at that point. But you know, he was like 16 or something in the show. So you know, at the time, he was just another actor, and he played the character, and I, you know, whatever. And then he, you know, like any other person who played anyone on Star Trek, he was doing the contours and stuff. And there's a podcast that I'm a big fan of that I'm friends with the podcasters, the Trek Geeks podcast. They even interviewed him, and it was a great interview. And then the Kevin Spacey rape allegations came out. And all of a sudden, Mr. Intirami on Twitter is not only saying that what Kevin Spacey did wasn't bad. Now, if you're not familiar with what came out about Kevin Spacey, apparently Mr. Spacey has been something of an open secret in Hollywood for years, where Kevin Spacey is gay. And he was known to
he liked young men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very young men.
Yeah.
And Anthony Rapp, who plays Stamets on Discovery, came out as saying that when he was 14, he was at a party and Spacey assaulted him. And Spacey didn't deny it. He just was like, "Oh, I was drunk. My bad." And that was on top of a lot of other allegations. That's real. I'm really nutshelling this a lot.
This is the beginning of the Kevin Spacey whole saga. Exactly. This was like the first or second allegation against him. This was the beginning of Kevin Spacey's downfall.
Yeah, the beginning of the
fall. This is a big part of it. Yeah, the beginning of the Me Too movement.
Yeah. And Rapp was, I repeat, 14 when this happened. And Inter-Ami went on Twitter and started defending Spacey and saying it was a different time and this was happening. And everybody's like, dude, Rapp was 14. Spacey was in his 30s or 20, you know, late 20s.
He was like 26, I think. Yeah, something like that.
It was not in any way, you know.
Oops.
An oops, yeah. And he doubled down and just became a major douchebag about it.
Well, he basically said, well, if I was 14 and a 26-year-old had come on to me, I would have done it, you know, or something like that. So.
And so it just snowballed. Now, I what I was looking at today, because I knew we'd talk about it tonight, I saw something that said he has since apologized to Rapp. I don't know if that's true. I don't know what conspired. I just kind of like wrote the dude off. Because I didn't like the character anyway, and I don't care about the actor. I haven't seen him in anything since. But he is tainted. He is bad news. And I'm not at all surprised that he did not get asked to come back and play the character for this part.
No.
He did get asked to come back and play the character on Renegades, though.
Well, yeah, that's right. Renegades, too, after they had to not call it Star Trek anymore.
No, this is before. This is when they were still calling it Star Trek.
Oh, the first one? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, another actor that didn't come back was Brian Brophy that played the original actor that played Bruce Maddox.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in that.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to see him because he's not acting anymore. He's a teacher now. He teaches theater in California. Now, does that mean that he can't come back? No, he can. They may have asked him, but he may have been like, look, I played that character one time, you know, 30 years ago. Yeah. I don't really want to come back for that. But the guy that they brought back did not do a bad job. His name is John Ailes, and he's played in stuff like Sneaky Pete and Bosch, you know, so he's a pretty good actor. So we see him as Bruce Maddox on FreeCloud. Now, giving him a full beard was a good choice. You know,
it made it very confusing. I had to IMDb it because I was like, is that him?
Yeah.
Same. I just assumed it was him.
30 years, he's got a beard. He could look different.
Right. I mean, look at the dude that played Arn Darvin. Would you have recognized him if we didn't know it was the same dude in Trials and Tribulations?
30 years later, and put a beard on him. Right, yeah, you can pass for the character, but so he's on FreeCloud and he tells Bejazel that he can't pay what he owes her. So I guess she's kind of like a kingpin or whatever on FreeCloud, and he says to Tal Shiar destroyed his lab and everything. Now, she drugs him. I thought she killed him. I thought she had poisoned him and he died, you know. But then, you know, he's alive later, so obviously she didn't.
Well, she can't sell the Tal Shiar a dead dude.
That's true, yeah. So.
By the way, Virginia, did you know that the actress that played Bejazel was the voice of Yasmin Fawaz in Archer?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
So she was, I think it was season 6 and she was like on for like 2 seconds or something, but yeah, I was looking her up to see if I knew her from anything. Cause you know, she looks a hell of a lot like Marina Sirtis and everybody is commenting on that. But I, you know, I wanted to see if I knew her from anything else. And yeah, she was one of the voices in Archer.
She's a pretty substantial. She's got a lot of acting credits. She's a regular. She's a regular, or she was a regular at one time on NCIS New Orleans, and she was on The Good Doctor, and she was on 24 for a while too. So those are not small shows, we see Seven and Picard, and they're talking in the holographic chateau, and he's telling her that about the mission that he's on, because she kind of makes a statement that the Fenris Rangers help people that can't help themselves, you know? So he says, well, I'm trying to help someone that can't help themselves, you know? So she says, well, pour me another drink.
And, can I just say that Jeri Ryan is the absolute freaking bomb?
Oh, man. I was about to say that she is so good in this. I mean, she was good as Seven, but Seven is this automaton. So getting to see her do this, it's amazing to see her really. Yeah.
And you know what? I've been following her for years on Twitter. I even got a retweet from her once. Yay. And she's just incredible. She is like so cool and so generous to the fans, and just, you know, you would not in any way begrudge her being stuck up, but she totally isn't. Mm-hmm. She's just an awesome human being, as well as just, you know, time is being so gentle to her. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the type of person who, just like you said, you get a retweet from her on Twitter, and that makes you squee with a with a fan goodness. Whereas on the upper end of the spectrum, we were just talking about Interami. Seth, how many times has he tried to follow you on Twitter?
Oh, well, you know, hundreds on each different account. This morning I got him following me on my non-Trek account because it's got a lot of Trek content because, you know, I like Star Trek a lot, so no matter what. But, yeah, he follows all the time, and you soft block him, and then he follows again and follows again. Yeah.
Yeah, I've gotten a follow from him on each of my three different Twitter accounts. He really wants Star Trek fans to like him and follow him back. He really, really wants it. Well, look, at least he did. Now that they've killed his character and they're obviously not going to bring him back into the franchise, he might lighten up on that. But
no, there's still a ton of people who are like, morning. Dude, that was so cruel what they did to you. And he's like, I didn't play it. How could you kill your character? I don't know. It wasn't me.
I don't think we're going to get a HEB series anytime soon.
No.
I did like go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say Jeri Ryan, like was being said, is I agree because the actress, I can't pronounce her name, so I'm not going to try, who plays Christian Avasarala on The Expanse show is pretty generous in that same way. She interacts with the fans well, and Jeri Ryan.
Agnes Shalhoub, I can't remember her first name, but yeah, she...
Yeah,
I got a like from her, and my heart just grew three sizes one time. It was awesome.
Yep.
Rios and Rafi are having a conversation, and... their conversation kind of seemed like it was stitched together because the writers felt like they had to remind us that Seven used to be a Borg.
Yeah, that was a little bit of an info dump scene, but it was okay because they were fanboying and girling over him, so it worked.
So she used to be a Borg like him, and then another writer is like, oh, we need to remind everybody that Picard used to be a Borg too. So Rio says, oh, I forgot that he used to be a Borg. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I find that hard to believe, but okay.
I love Rios. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I think Rios is awesome.
Hey, I wouldn't say anything bad about him. I think the character is fine. I just find it hard to believe that a character who obviously respects Picard as much as he does would have ever forgotten about that.
And his former Starfleet. I mean, he probably was in Starfleet during the incident. If he's former at this point, he probably, I don't know, maybe I'm too old, but it feels like he would have been in Starfleet during Worf 359.
If he was, I think that's the point. I think, he says, I almost let myself forget. It's not that he was unaware of it. It's that... Now that this man is in your presence that you heard so much about, like, you don't remember the worst thing that happened to him. You think you remember all the great stuff. It's like, oh, right, yeah, that happened too. I forgot about that.
By the way, Sean, did you mention that this episode was directed by Frakes too?
Yeah, at the beginning I said they were both directed by
Frakes. Oh, you did? Okay, cool. Because this one feels very not Frakes, and I'm...
he did get to direct some things that I've never... seen him direct before, because I've seen some things he's directed other than Star Trek, and you know, most of the stuff that he directs other than Star Trek are just episodes here and there of various TV shows, you know, right. But nothing like this.
It didn't feel un-Frakes like to me from other stuff that I've seen him direct. I mean, yeah, that scene at the beginning was maybe a little more gruesome, but not much. I mean, I'd say it's about on par with one of the darker episodes of The Librarian. I'm not even kidding.
I know it's not.
I like the show.
I've only seen one episode of The Librarian. Did he direct most of them?
He directed a few. I don't know how many, but I mean, a handful, I guess.
The Librarians was a good show. Yeah,
I was not impressed with the one I saw, but then it wasn't bad. It was just like, this is really a by the numbers show. Okay.
Yes. But yes.
So they go to Free Cloud and they put this plan together to try to trade Maddox for Seven and then beam Seven out. So several of them put on costumes. Rios kind of dresses like a pimp. And I like that Seven says you need to put a feather in your cap. And then he literally has a feather in his cap.
Yeah.
And Picard's costume is to be more French than he already is because Picard is the most British Frenchman that's ever lived. he's a Frenchman that's never had to be French, and he's a Frenchman that drinks Earl Grey tea and reads Shakespeare, you know. So
he was ridiculous in this role. Ridiculous, but somehow it still worked.
I've been struggling to find a headcanon that worked for me for this, because this was so much Patrick Stewart and not Jean-Luc Picard. And I finally found an in for myself, which is going back to seasons like 1 and 2, where he would do the Dixon Hill stuff.
Right. I was going to say, he's playing a character on the holodeck is basically what this is.
And he's really bad at it.
Oh yeah, he was like, it was like his accent was like a cartoon character, you know.
The subtitles even say that cartoonish French accent.
Yeah, sinister. I'm surprised they didn't give him like a little mustache for him to twirl and all that kind of stuff. So they go to Quark's bar. They go to Quark's bar right down the street from Mr. Mott's Hair Emporium.
Yeah.
Those were fun.
Most of the time, stuff like that pisses me off. But for some reason in this episode, I was like, that is hilarious. You know, like when you one of the reasons I hate reading like Star Wars novels is because like there's the only Star Wars novel I tried to read in the past decade was the one where it's like the horror one. It's the cover is a bloody stormtrooper helmet on a hook. I don't even remember the name of it. Death Troopers, that's it. And like in the first 10 pages, there's like 5 Tatooine references. And I get so sick of reading stuff where it's like, look how much trivia I know, instead of just telling a story. So usually that stuff pisses me off. But for some reason, Mott's Hair Emporium and Quark's bar being on Free Cloud, I just loved it.
And it made sense. It wasn't shoehorned in. It of course Quark has a bar there. Assuming he's still alive and still successful-ish, he would have a bar on Free Cloud.
Yeah,
Quark of Ferengi.
You think it's like a franchise, right?
Yeah, I think that he's expanded. He has different various locations of Quark bars all over the quadrant.
Because Mr. Vup totally fits.
It was great. Yeah.
Mr. Vup says to Rios, you know, your credentials. I got your credentials from Mr. Quark of Ferenginar.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I was talking to Scott online after I watched the episode and was like, yeah, it wouldn't make sense for him to say Mr. Quark of Ferenginar if Quark was in that building. You know, he would just say Quark or Mr.
Yeah.
Quark.
It's like that. Yeah, the boss. Is,
yeah. Right. And I guess,
and also, the boss probably not, Quark was gave permission for that.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Why?
Because Quark's a Federation sympathizer.
I think Quark was not consulted. I think they're like, I think she knows of Quark because Picard knows of Quark, and she probably knows. I mean, clearly he's a presence, and he's a big enough name that they can drop his name. And if someone asked, Quark would know enough to cover for whoever this is. And
I think Seven has definitely dealt with Quark in the past.
That's what I mean. I'm not saying they necessarily called credentials.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't ask him. They're like, we need a name that she placed a cover that was believable and respectable, but not, you know, supremely flaunty. And just, you know, Quark is someone you could believe does shady dealings. That name carries some weight to it now. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't necessarily check.
There is no way Quark wouldn't know when his name is being used.
I think that's, well, I agree to disagree.
Okay.
I think trying to untangle the did he or didn't he of this angle of the story is diving a little too deep than it was designed for.
Agreed. Yeah.
Hey, we're nerds. It's what we do.
No, but this stuff right here is what is the awesomest thing about this Picard show, is because we get more check-ins. We get to talk more about these characters that have been just like in this stagnant place for the past 20, 30 years. It's awesome. I'm super excited about looking up stuff on Memory Alpha and seeing new entries for you know, Quark. Not just new entries from Discovery. New entries from stuff that we've been tracking.
New entries for the Memory Alpha article on Tranya.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we talk about the fact that money is a huge thing all of a sudden?
All of a sudden, right. I'm like, they're not on Earth. They're in Vegas. They're in space Vegas. So, yeah.
Money's always been I mean, Deep Space Nine, they dealt with money all the time. It's just on Earth where they don't use money, but everybody else does.
Yeah. Like Sisko said, it's easy to be, you know, an angel in a saint in paradise. So the whole, you know, money being gone, poverty being fixed, war being that's all just Earth, right? I mean, it's just Earth.
Maybe a little bit.
And that other humanity tries to do that with the Federation. Yeah, maybe on Earth and Vulcan and Doria and
An example among many of something that was set up in the very early days of 80s Trek, you know, first couple seasons of TNG, money isn't a thing. It's utopia. Everyone, you know, it's all socialist and everyone has everything and no one has to, you know, beg and scrape for money. But then a couple seasons later, they realize, man, it's really hard to tell some of these stories without the concept of money. Let's reintroduce the concept of money. So now we get into new modern Trek, and money is a big deal. And the people who hate new Trek are like, why are they talking about money? It's supposed to be utopia. No, just things change. And sometimes you have to retcon in order to make this stuff work. They did it from the 60s to the 80s, and they're doing it again.
Watch the last couple of episodes of The Good Place. Like, utopia is kind of boring.
one of my favorite lines from DS9 is, I can't remember what it is that Jake wants to buy, but he doesn't have money because he's a human and he wants to borrow it. I get this like, why don't you pay for it? It's like, well, I'm a human. We don't have money. We don't need money. Well, if you don't need money, then you don't need mine.
He's trying to buy a baseball.
It's easy to make everything even fit, because again, it just goes back to on Earth, this is the utopia. And if you want to be a human who lives in any city on Earth and just, you know, live off of basic in expanse terms, you can do that. But if you want to live out, you know, if you want to be Rios and you want to engage with any other species, they don't just take human goodwill for goods. You know, you need to pay them in some way. So you need to earn money in some way. And your utopia stops working as soon as you leave that third rock.
Especially on shady ass free cloud.
that was one of my favorite moments in this episode was when they get to free cloud and they want to beam down, and Rios is like, they said no. And he's like, did you tell them I'm here? Picard's like, tell them I'm here. And they're like, that's the first thing we did. They weren't impressed.
when you're trying to get to Vashti.
Oh, that was...
Yeah, that was Vashti.
That was Vashti?
Yeah.
You know, Free Cloud had the pop-up advertisements. Vashti had the security.
Oh, right. Okay.
Can we talk about the pop-up advertisements for a second? Like, so yes. They're all... apparently tailored. I don't know, do they have a telepath working the comm system, but like they kind of know
comments on Facebook and data mining and stuff like that, but yeah.
So
a little bit of foreshadowing, they sent, you know, because you know everybody kind of gets something that okay, you run the ship, so you'll need a mechanic, you know, and you apparently are recovering addicts, so you'll need some weed for you, and you know this and that, and Girardi gets, yeah, it's an institute of robotics. Okay, well, she's a scholar, but it's in the form of
a Rackham Cycle robot.
And so. Again, this is what I'm saying. Like on the rewatch, okay, well, clearly she was already having thoughts of violence, and so that's how the ad presented to her. At least that's my headcanon. Like it wasn't somebody in a lab coat saying come and learn. It was, you know, okay, you want to learn, but also you got kind of a, you know, this is in your head for some reason.
I wanted to bring this up later, but since you mention it, I'm of two minds about Agnes. First of all, she's being annoying fuck lately. either she's an android and doesn't know it.
She's not.
I don't think
or
so.
I thought that up until somebody mentioned this and I was like, oh yeah. Is Commodore O not a Romulan, but a Vulcan, and Agnes is suffering from a mind meld, an unwilling mind meld. Mm.
So, if I may.
Of course.
No. Man, no, I don't think she's suffering from a mind meld. You know, again, what I was saying about the rewatch, so she's left up on the ship, and, you know, she's like, okay, you don't have to you can do this, you have to do this. And you think she's talking about, all right, I don't know how to beam anybody up, but I can beam them up in this sense. That's not what she's talking about. She's talking about what happens later.
Yeah.
And I don't think if it was a mind meld, she would be talking herself into something she didn't. I didn't get that sense. I can't say it wouldn't happen that way. I did not get that sense. I feel like, and when she's talking to Maddox as it's happening, she's like, I'm so sorry this has to happen, but I have to do this.
She says, I wish I didn't know what they showed me.
Yes.
Now, they said in the first couple of episodes, one of Picard's Romulan housekeepers told him the Jat Vash have a secret that makes people go crazy when they find out about it. Now, she only knows that it makes Romulans go crazy because there's some crazy Romulans on the artifact that obviously know the secret or whatever. Maybe that secret doesn't make humans go crazy, but they know that things need to be done to keep that secret from coming out. And Bruce Maddox, you know, the whole thing of him making Soji and making what was the other girl's name? Dash. Yeah. All of that's gonna make this secret come out. You know, so the only thing that she can do is what they told her to do, and they told her Bruce Maddox cannot come back. You know, but he has to die or something. You know,
I don't.
My problem with
the secret made Agnes go crazy, it seems like, and made her Hannah.
She doesn't seem crazy.
I don't think she's crazy. I think she made a horrible decision.
She killed her lover. Yeah. I mean, she might not be like rubber walls crazy, but she's like, not in her right self anymore.
She had to feel like it was necessary.
We don't know what she knows. Like
it had to happen.
That's the thing, though. Is for me. If humans are really, really, really good at ignoring what we don't want to know. And if it was just a matter of, here, watch this slideshow, I don't think she would kill her lover. I think that there was that O did something to her that made her believe that killing the man she loves was the only way to save the universe.
I agree with everything in that sentence except the terminology of did something to her. It may just be that she just convinced her with very compelling evidence. Whether or not that evidence
she
was
took
true.
Her sunglasses off and did some eye action there.
I pulled out the neuralizer.
Yeah. She did the flashy thing. She had the flashy thing.
Okay. I think that if Rick is correct and if O was a Vulcan, then maybe she showed Agnes the hidden secret of the Jat Vash via a mind meld. That could be. And after seeing it, Agnes was like, oh my God, you're right. This is bad. I do have to kill Bruce because what might start happening cannot happen. And I was reminded just a moment ago about the fact that super secret that the Jat Vash have can drive people insane. And all the Romulans that were assimilated by the Borg went insane. And someone, I can't remember if it was on this podcast in a previous episode or if it was somewhere else, had put forth the theory that they wonder if the secret that the Jat Vash hold is that somewhere way far in the past, Romulans had a hand in the creation of the Borg. And
I've
if that's
heard
the
that,
case.
And I don't like it.
Well,
I've heard it too, but what about the spatial difference between Delta Quadrant, Beta Quadrant? That's the only thing that convinces me it's not happening.
Well, maybe it's not.
Everybody, we need to pause for a second. Virginia, we are totally talking and not letting you get in a word in edgewise. Do you have anything you want to...
I had actually been talking with someone the other day because I made that same point. Like, they were in the Delta Quadrant. How could that even have happened? And my friend Colin was saying, well, you know, maybe it has something to do with first contact when they came back in time to Earth. And then how did I guess some Borg landed on the planet or they got expelled into space or something. So that maybe at some point they were trying to get back to the Delta Quadrant and then bumped into the Romulans.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Well, the NX-01 did expel some assimilated and partially assimilated humans during their run-in with the Borg.
There could very well have been some nanotechnology that survived that. Just kind of floating out in space somewhere. That is possible. Maybe the Borg have a spore drive.
That would be bad.
Virginia, you haven't had a chance to talk very much in the last few minutes. So, what do you think about the scenes that we got between Rafi and her son?
So I kind of noticed this throughout the series so far and even the short trek. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it seems like abandoned children or absentee parents seem to be kind of a recurring theme. Like, I feel like we're getting different depictions of the various stages of processing that kind of trauma. Like in Children of Mars, we see Lil and Kima, basically Lil like provokes Kima into a fight because she's mad at her dad who's not home with her. Then we see, like, how Elnor is trying to come to terms with how Picard abandoned him, but still wanting to help him and still feeling loyal to him. And then we see Rafi with Gabe, and he is not ready to do any kind of reconciliation. Like, he is vibrating with anger. Like, it's just pouring off of him. And so while I felt bad for Rafi, like, she probably really is trying to make a fresh start, I can totally see, you know, Gabe being like, now, my wife or girlfriend or whoever is pregnant, you pick now to come over here and try to make good like nothing ever happened. And you won't even deny this stuff that drove us apart in the first place. And Rafi's probably right. There's probably a great big conspiracy that we're going to find out in the next few episodes. But that doesn't matter to him as her child. She is supposed to be his mom first and foremost. Whether that's selfish or not, he was a child. Children are selfish. So to me, it was totally believable on both sides. She wants to make good. He's not ready to hear it yet.
Yeah, that scene was really good. That was heartbreaking because you knew what was going to happen, but like you didn't, like there was no way around. There was no way around it.
Yeah.
Do you think, because she says, I'm clean now, but we know she was smoking the snake leaf, you know, a few days ago. Do you think she was being disingenuous when she says, I'm clean?
I think
she sincerely wants to be clean, but I also think she's an addict. Like, so do you, like, I don't know how addiction, like, I don't know the biochemical component of addiction in Star Trek. Can you just take a shot and you're not physically addicted anymore?
I think she was focusing on the wrong thing.
You think what?
I think she was focusing on the wrong thing. She was telling him that she's off the whatever.
Snake leaf. Or she probably more than that, honestly.
Just saying I'm clean. That's not his concern.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay. This scene hit me really hard because my childhood wasn't anywhere near as bad as this, but my mom was an alcoholic and we had some rough times. She wasn't the best mother, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was the 70s and 80s. We all, you know, anyone my age probably went through this shit. So the thing is, she came in there talking to him about how much better she was. And even in her trying to make up with him, she was being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her opening gambit was, look, I'm all better now. And he's like, fuck you. You're still not here for me. You're still talking about you. And, you know, normally when I drop an F-bomb, I apologize. Please don't edit that one. Because it's intentional. I really felt for Gabriel in this scene, and I really think he was being far nicer than he had cause to be. Mm-hmm. Because her whole gambit was, I'm here because I missed you. I'm all better because I want you back. None of it was, how are you? How can I help you? It was all about her. And that's and she got exactly the response she deserved.
Yeah, and I also think when she says that she's clean, she's not talking about the snake leaf because you know I look at snake leaf, I'm thinking that it's kind of like weed.
Yeah.
And we don't consider people that smoke weed to be drug addicts, you know. But she knew exactly what to put in that hypo spray that she gave Rios to make him glassy eyed and everything else. So she obviously has had some issues with some harder stuff, you know, and I think that's the stuff that she's talking about being clean from, that she hasn't been using that stuff. But and the snake leaf probably just kind of helps her with some of the withdrawals and that kind of stuff, you know.
And to your point, Rick, that's not what he wasn't talking about, any kind of drugs. Her drug is this conspiracy. That's what he was.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's what he views as the thing that pulled her away from the family.
I am really curious what the Conclave of Eight he was talking about, because he's like, deny the conspiracy, deny the Conclave of Eight. And that's when she burst out. She's like, no, it's all true. And he just like, okay, then get the hell out. I don't want to talk to you.
And here's the thing. We know, or we presume as the audience, that they're both right. I'm sure this conspiracy thing is real, and I'm sure she was a shitty mother because of it. And you want a happier ending than what is possible right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got to wind this up because we're approaching 2 hours. But I do want to, real quick, Picard and Seven have a conversation towards the end of the episode before she beams down to kill. Go ahead.
Before you get there, I've got one other thing I want to bring up about the whole Seven and Bejazel thing. Mm-hmm. Did anyone else get a jilted lover vibe from the two of them?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't. Yes, they weren't subtle. Okay. That was my yes. Or betrayed lover, not so much.
Betrayed lover.
I can see it. I didn't think that when I saw it. I thought that they were definitely close, but I wasn't getting a lover thing. But I can see where you can where you would say that.
On the second viewing, because at first I was like, did I see that? And I was paying attention the second time, and it was even stronger the second time.
But what about Chakotay?
Oh, fuck that.
I mean, even
that one, if you want. That was the most misguided pairing Star Trek ever did.
Even if that were the case, one does not negate the other.
Yeah.
Okay, so Picard and Seven are having a conversation, and Seven asks him if he ever felt like he got his humanity back after he was assimilated by the Borg, and he said yes. And then she asked him completely, and he said no.
That was the most beautiful scene.
Okay, question.
But we're still really trying.
Go ahead, Virginia.
Do we know, because I rewatch Next Generation on occasion, and I can't remember this being brought up. Does Picard still have internal Borg implants?
Yes.
Doesn't he have like some sort of connection with the Borg in First Contact?
Yeah.
He's still. I remember the phrase. His body is riddled with Borg tech still. Like they can't pull it out. They don't even know how all of it works.
Well, and in First Contact, didn't he start hearing them a little bit from time to time?
Yeah.
And as they were taking over the ship, I think you're right. He's tuned into the collective.
He had a mental connection with them in First Contact, yes, but I don't recall when anyone said that he was still riddled with Borg tech. I remember at the end of Best of Both Worlds that after he had been disconnected from the collective, Beverly said, "We should have no trouble getting those implants out now."
Yeah.
And as far as I know, they removed all the tech.
They don't talk about it in TNG, but once we get into Voyager, then there's kind of a retcon saying you can't take all the tech out or you'll kill them. So you could probably...
Seven still has the cortical node. She can't live without the cortical node.
I didn't see a lot of Voyager, and I don't remember if it was from the show or the movie, but I remember Picard saying that line. That there was still Borg tech all through his body.
I would not be surprised if they retconned it. No, Scott's right. They did say that at the end of Best of Both Worlds that they were going to get it all out. But I would not be surprised if there was a retcon saying that he still had some.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever addressed it with Picard. But it was, you know, it was very clear in Voyager that the Doctor. And you know, it's been years, but I don't recall the exact lines, but it was, you know, we can't get all, that's why she's got the thing on her face and the thing on her hand. And why later on when we, you know, when we get the Borg babies and we get Ichab and the other former Borg and they all have some bit stuck to them somewhere and you know, we see Hugh in Picard and he's got Borg bits still sticking out of his face. They can't take everything out without killing the person anymore.
I would have just assumed that because it was such a short-term assimilation that the Borg components had not fully integrated into Picard's body, so they could still remove them.
Sure, why not?
Otherwise, if they want to go with the premise that he still has a lot of Borg tech in him, then he probably would have set off a few alarm bells when he beamed down with Seven. They would have said, "Yeah, she's got a whole bunch of Borg tech in her." And so,
I agree with you because that was the one. That scene was one of the best scenes I've seen in Star Trek between the two, Picard and Seven of Nine at the end there. I loved that scene so much. But one of the weird mismatches was how she's asking him for advice. And like you said, Scott, he was he was a member of the collective, and she was from childhood all the way up to being a full grown adult. I mean, years, decades. Mm-hmm. There's a huge mismatch in the amount of time that they had the tech in them. So he could have been completely clear. I thought he would have been.
Okay. At the end of, Star Trek First Contact did a lot of disservice to the Borg or changed a lot of things with the Borg. But one of the most telling lines I think that's pertinent to this conversation is at the end when after all is done and Picard asks Data, were you tempted? And he says yes for 0.76 seconds or something like that, which to an android is an eternity. Electronics, even today, operate at such fantastic speeds compared to the way we do. You know, we throw around the term nanosecond very easily, but how many of us really appreciate that a nanosecond is one thousandth or 10,000? I forget. It's been a long time since I had to do those numbers, but you know, I have training in electronics from my time in the service, and if you were able to think and function at the speeds that electronics do, a minute is literally a year. And I'm not exaggerating. And
one billionth of a second.
Thank you. So things that and nanoseconds are slow compared to what a lot of things can do now, and we're not Borg. You know, we don't have Borg technology. So yes, Picard was assimilated for a few days, but to a mechanical / electronic creature, race, whatever, that's irrelevant.
That's an interesting point.
See what you did there.
Oh. All righty. I think that's a good place to stop. Want to thank everybody for being here. Rick, thank you for being here. Let everybody know where they can find you.
Go to starbasecommand.net. You can find all the stuff I do where I blabber on about more stuff like this all the time.
And Scott, you as well.
You can find me hosting the Prime Direction right here on the Cosmic Potato Network. New episodes will be returning in probably within the next month once I have new studio space set up within the next week or two. You can also find me on Twitter at Fleet Admiral UFP for my personal account, at Prime Direct Pod for the Prime Direction Twitter account, and at Planet Rise for all of my freelance and contracted graphic artwork.
All right. And John, you just released 400th episodes.
I did. I'm going to actually use my show pitching time to rattle off some of the notes that I took that I didn't get a chance to say during the show. So, yeah, Captain Game Show. But a hologram can't intervene. The medical hologram can't intervene in a life-threatening situation. You can't call an alarm or something. That seems like bullshit to me. They had to better have a really good explanation for that next episode. Is anyone else having trouble finding the Ready Room on CBS All Access? Because I can't find it. I rewatched Measure of a Man.
It's on Facebook.
YouTube.
I watched it on YouTube, but it seems weird to me that it's not, because the first episode was, and now I can't find any of them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I rewatched Measure of a Man. I know you guys watched it beforehand. I didn't, all right? I rewatched it just recently. Picard chided Louvois. She says, they forced me out. And Picard says, nope, that was your own damn stubborn pride. And he's like, well, we hope you learn a little lesson along the way. And she says, you're still a pompous ass. And I think that's great because that exact same thing happened to Picard. And he was a pompous ass and he still is. But I love the show. Captain Game Show. Also. This is the Captain Game Show, too.
All right, Virginia.
You can find me here on the Cosmic Potato Network. I do a podcast with my boyfriend Shane called Wait, You've Never Seen, where we talk about movies and TV shows that one of us has never seen.
All right. And Seth.
When I'm looking for The Ready Room on CBS All Access, I go into Picard and then into more episodes and then down to the bottom to related shows, and then it's down there. It's a pain in the butt, but that's how I find it.
Okay, I'll try it again.
That's how I do it. But also, if you have other questions, you could always hit me up at Verse Trek or at The Real Nice. Alien 2. I do tweeting for both those two places.
All right. And thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to find out how to get in touch with us, just hold on a minute, and announcer Nate will let you know. Be sure to join us again next week when we discuss the next episode of Star Trek Picard, which is titled The Impossible Box. Joel Antru.
I dated her.
What?
I knew somebody was going to make the joke.
Sorry.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Star Trek All Access. You can contact us on Facebook and Twitter, or you can send us an email at trekaccess@gmail.com. You can also send us a voicemail or text message to 205-642-8380. Help the show grow by giving us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. Star Trek All Access is not affiliated with CBS or Paramount Pictures. No infringement of copyrighted material is intended. Be sure to join us again next time on Star Trek All Access, right here at CosmicPotatoNetwork.com.
You guys remember Seth? He was on the show once last year for season 2 of Discovery. He was on the episode that we did that John fell asleep.
Yeah, that's ironic because that might happen again tonight.
Well, no, that's not allowed, John, because I might be the one doing it tonight.
We're just going to take a nap in the middle of the show.
I got myself some Earl Grey tea in honor of Picard, and it has some caffeine, so I'm hoping that'll help me.
The reason I was behind answering the call was because I went upstairs to get some Coke. Okay. not so.
Some fine Colombian.
Of course. Hello.
The new Coca-Cola energy drink. Have you tried that?
No.
I haven't either. I'm not an energy drink fan, but they say it just tastes like Coke. So I don't know.
It's actually Coke Zero. So I'm trying to. By the way, Sean, unrelated, but congratulations on going on your weight loss journey. One of the things that I did that has been effective is, I mean, but you already drink like Diet Mountain Dew and stuff, right? You already.
Yeah, Diet Mountain Dew and Mountain Dew Zero. Yeah. Which I'm trying to cut down on that because I really drink too much of it, but I'm trying to drink more water. But it's hard when you've been drinking that stuff for, 30 years.
You know what fish do in water, right?
Not this water.
You know the old story of when Shirley Temple offered W.C. Fields a glass of water, and he said to little, cute, adorable 5-year-old Shirley Temple that never touched the stuff fish fuck in it.
No, I never heard that.
Fuck it, yeah. That's charming.
Marcus Brody said the same thing in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Not quite as clearly, though.
Well, right. he's a proper English university president, so he said make love.
Yes. Have you seen the meme that's Picard in his white just beamed down to Vashti outfit with the you'll never find him. He's an expert, speaks 1,000 languages. He'll blend in. He'll disappear. And then underneath, he's like,
"Is everyone ready?"
Sure.
What episode are we talking about?
We're doing episode 4, right? 4 and 5 because we didn't record last week.
Right. Yeah. I've that's where the podcast stopped with episode 3. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, we're just gonna.
I took notes for both.
We're just gonna cover both episodes in this one. So.
All right. And I just rewatched 1.5 of them before we started.
I rewatched the whole series just because I kind of wanted to do that for time.
I haven't had time to do that yet. I've wanted to. I'm just going to wait until it's all out and then just binge the whole thing again.
Yeah, so. I'll probably try to do that when we get to the end of the season. I would have rewatched both episodes, but I kind of fell asleep for the second half of Stardust City.
All right, here we go. Okay.